You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Beyond the Baseline Tennis Podcast. And for a guest, we have Brad Gilbert. A few of you suggested we should get him on. It would be a good conversation, and indeed you were right. Brad is terrific. I want to say as a programming note, we recorded this a few days before the Maria Sharapova doping announcement. So just be advised of that. If Sharapova's name comes up, it was done in advance of Monday's press conference where she announced that, yes, in fact, she had tested positive for a substance on the ban list. That out of the way, let's get to Brad. You obviously know him from ESPN. What you don't always know about Brad, and I will say this because he does not do it to his great credit on air. We'll talk about this. What you don't know about Brad is he was one hell of a tennis player. Ranked as high as number 4, won over 500 matches, won 20 titles. For all the commentators out there that often reflect on their own tennis careers, Brad is remarkably buttoned up with this, as he will tell you he'd rather talk about the present and the future than the past. But make no mistake, Brad was a great player. He also, of course, and this is what I like about him best perhaps, he makes tennis so accessible to casual sports fans. There are nicknames, there are references to other sports other than tennis. He really seems to have a good time with it. That comes across, obviously, in his commentary. So, without further ado, he's currently gloating because his Golden State Warriors are about to win their second straight NBA title. But he's out in Oakland. I'm in New York. I'm about to go to California. He's about to go to New York. So, before we got on our respective flights, we figured we'd talk. Bring him in now, Brad Gilbert. Brad, how are you?
Hello, BG. Radio Nation alive and well.
Welcome.
Good morning. How are you, John?
Good. How's Raider Nation?
Raider Nation, you know, hopefully we are going to get some love off of, you know, what's been happening with the Dubs. It's been so long that we've been relevant. My son, you know, Lee's finally, he's 27 years old. Last year was the first time he got to see a winner his whole life. We've had to watch the Giants win, but we're diehard Oakland fans.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're hoping, you know, maybe, you know, it's been 14 years since we've been 500. So let's hope next year is the start of us being 500 and being relevant again.
As long as you brought it up, your son is a really delightful kid. Sort of like what I say about Jimmy Connors. Whatever you want to say about the guy, he raised a Menchie kid, so you should know that. Things are pretty good. You know what, let's start with tennis, then we go back to East Bay sports, because I do really want to talk about the Warriors in all seriousness. But we got to start with tennis, all right?
Okay.
Djokovic, he's like the Warriors. It's like East Bay sports all over again. No, I mean, this. You know how the Warriors have hijacked the NBA? I mean, the Clippers were playing Oklahoma City last night. And I'm like, neither of them's going to beat Golden State, so it doesn't matter. It's kind of the Djokovic show in tennis right now, isn't it?
You know what? It's kind of interesting is like what's happening with the Warriors. I've had to see pretty much my whole life, you know, with the Lakers, with Showtime, and how relevant they've been. The Warriors hadn't won the division before last year since 75. But the thing is, with the Lakers, you know, they had huge fan appeal. Now, outside of, you know, the LA area code, a lot like what the Warriors are experiencing for the first time ever.
Right.
But on the heels of what Joker's doing, and mind you, my eyes have never seen anybody play tennis better. And I think that we keep it, you know, growing upon where we're going. And I'm not like these, a lot of these old basketball players are saying what Curry is doing.
I was
going to
say, what's Oscar Robertson say about Djokovic?
Yeah. So to me, what Djokovic has done, first of all, he was number 3 forever. And the fact that he chased these two guys for have such massive fan bases. I mean, first you got Fed, who destroys Derek Jeter fan base, you know, and then you've got Rafa, who's beloved.
Right.
Then you even got Murray, who's got a much smaller base. And then to me, Joker is playing at such a genius level, but yet doesn't have the fan base like these others. And so I think that, you know, a little bit like Lindo, so many people kind of root for him to lose now just because how incredibly good he is. And I'm just amazed at his level day in and day out, what he's playing at and where he's going to continue to go the next 24 to 36 months.
As a coach, this sounds rhetorical, but it's not. I mean, realistically, how do you beat this guy? I mean, you're coaching whoever. You're coaching Andy. You're coaching Gilles Simone, whoever it is. What are you telling him?
Well, I mean, obviously every situation is different upon how you're in the trenches with the player that you're coaching and what their skill set was. But amazingly, I've seen so many unbelievable players, been in the trenches with some of them. To see a match like what Djokovic went through in Melbourne against Simon.
Right.
99.999% of the guys lose that match. The fact that he could find a way to win that match and then go on and capitalize the rest of the tournament just kind of cemented the genius level for me of where he's at. And like what Federer did, what Rafa's done, what Pisa, like so many great players have done, they push the envelope, you know, for everybody else to get better. They push the envelope for everybody else to get better, and now everybody else has to adjust to that. And that's what Fed did to everybody. Now this is what Joker's doing.
You didn't give me much there. So Roger, I mean, we're hitting high. But no, but seriously.
I'll say this. If you're playing Joker, in general, you need to be able to get 3 points off your serve. And you need to be able to play, in my mind, bold. You know, you need to be able to, you know, try to take him out of rhythm. Simone did it in a weird way where he just tried to make balls. But in general, I'll call it like what Soderling did to Rafa that one time. You've got to be able to make the points short, and you've got to be able to get 3 points.
Can a player win ugly today?
What's Simone doing?
Well, he's getting 100. He's getting. I don't mean against Djokovic. I mean, does winning ugly tennis still hold?
You know, in every sport, there's a way that you can do things that other people don't do. I would say I was an incredibly poor man's version, a little bit of way Andy Murray is. You know, you could argue until a couple years ago that Murray had a lot of that. Now he's playing a little more aggressively, but he had a lot of that people would look at him and not quite figure out what he's doing to be winning. And sometimes that's the genius of being able to do something in a sport where people, they kind of shake their head. How is he winning? I remember when I started coaching him in 2006, and everybody kept telling me, I mean, it's not, how is this guy winning? I mean, he's just a pusher. He does this, he does that. And I'm like, that immediately made me more drawn to him that, wow, so many people don't think he has, you know, things in his game, but you can't see it. So I think that is the geniusness of sports. But now I do believe, though, at the upper echelon of tennis, the one thing that's dramatically changed is athleticism and speed. And you can have any different style now to be great, you know, all-arounder, you know, great ground stroke, but you need speed and athleticism to be in the top four in the world.
I always laugh when everyone's talking about Raonic's athleticism, what's going to hold him back. You see the guy dunking, you see the guy lumbering around. Guy looks like a pretty decent athlete to me. I mean, if that's an example of a guy whose athleticism is going to prevent him from winning majors, that says a lot about where the sport's come.
I mean, he's a very good athlete.
I mean, he's not Roger, but
level,
exactly.
He's not the same. The level as the big, you know, as Murray, Djokovic, Rafa, Fed. But for his size, 6'5", 218 pounds or whatever it is, he's a darn good athlete. You know, a lot of these guys, Nishikori, Raonic, you know, some of these guys, that, you know, maybe you'll look back in 5 or 10 years, a little bit of like the Charles Barkley syndrome. You know, he just ran at the same time as Jordan.
Right,
this
right.
Big four has taken away from a lot of maybe one or two generations of possibilities. But I think it's going to really change the bar for these guys that are now 18 to 20, that in 4 or 5 years, at some point, the big four has to start to go, you know, at some point, you know, get older. Nobody cheats Father Time, but they've done amazing. But I think they're the ones, and maybe even some 15, 16-year-olds, who will push the envelope amazingly because of what Joker's doing right now, what Fed's done, what Rafa's done.
You going to coach Dimitrov already, or do we have to just keep going in circles here?
You know what's a rough word? Is expectation.
Yeah.
A lot has been expected of him.
That's true.
And I do know that my wife says this, maybe not about tennis, but about life. A lot of times when you're a copy, very hard to be as good as the original. And the fact that they were calling him the baby Fed and he had a game like Fed, I just think put more pressure on him. And I think over the last maybe 18 months, his game maybe hit a plateau. And at 23, you know, because he couldn't beat the big four in these, you know, and that ultimately hurts a lot of these guys is, you know, you're measured against that.
Right, right. You know who sells Brad Gilbert short?
The ones where I kind of blame my family, like the short shorts and the high socks and the tight shirt of the early 80s.
Like the big shorts.
Are now the long shorts and the no socks.
Or the Steve Carell movie. No, I was going to say, you sell yourself short. You won 20 titles. You got to number four. A lot of good wins. You don't talk a whole lot about your career as a player. Is that intended? I mean, you don't really play the, you know, when I was playing drill, that a lot of players who weren't as accomplished as you or did not play as recently as you are much more likely to do. Is that intentional? Why don't you don't tend to bring up your playing days very much at all, and I wonder why that is.
Well, first of all, there's enough of them that do it. And I feel like, you know, it's not relevant. Maybe it's a little more relevant that some of the guys that I did coach that played more recently and were in the thick of things, and the game has changed a lot of things. But I feel like I would prefer that we focus on what's happening. Or maybe, you know, when I coach some players that were maybe in the thick of things. But I don't want to get caught up in myself, and I'm completely over, you know, my playing. You know, I had a great run, but it's over. I love coaching. I love doing TV. I think that's more relevant, and I don't need to feel good about myself and talk about my results. They were only average, but, you know, we all wish we could, you know, be a little bit better. But that part's over.
I like hearing that. I was telling someone, I said, so we all love McEnroe Borg, but more than half the world's population wasn't born in 1981.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how I could talk about Andre. I could tell Andre's story, but it's like, you know, you start to think, man, there's a lot of 20-year-olds, unless they literally go to YouTube and stuff like that. It's not like they saw him and Pete play their epic matches. One of the most amazing things is I heard Taylor Fritz. I call him Fritz Carlton.
We just had him on the podcast.
He's 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly. He was five years old when Roger won his first major. Yeah.
Yeah, he says his idol is Pete Sampras. And it got me to thinking, 2002 is 16 years ago.
He was 2 years old.
Or 15 years ago, whatever it right. is. So, excuse me, 2002, 14
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what did he see him at 4 years old? Or
well, and 2002 was the very tail, you know, 2002 wasn't exactly the glory, one good tournament,
yeah,
but that wasn't the glory.
That's what I mean. It's kind of, I always like to check quirky stats or check things out, but it's like, wow. And then my son gave me this great stat in Melbourne that, like, every player that, like, there was in the book, I'm getting ready to do one of his matches, and every player that was in the book, my son gives it to me, that has their idol as Fed. And his winning record against the players that, like, he gave me this list, I'm doing this match, and it's like, oh, my idol, Roger Federer. And it was like, nope, nobody that is his idol has beaten him.
That's really funny.
Yeah, so he's like, he gave me the quirky stat. It's like, okay, when you got him in the yearbook and says, okay, my idol is, you know. But I heard that about Taylor Fritz when they were talking about him in Memphis. His idol, Pete Sampras, is like, man, he was into tennis when he was four.
Oh, he said to us, he said, yeah, when I was 16, I had to quit basketball to focus full time on tennis. You're like, you were 16.
I heard that story too.
2 years ago,
I saw him play at 15 at the Orange Bowl.
Okay.
And he was already all in on tennis at 15 in the Orange Bowl. That was the same year that Tiafu and Kozlov played in the final.
Right, right.
That was the same year. Right. So he was already, a lot of people were talking about him then, and he was 15.
All right, let's take I feel like I need to set the timer on my phone, but let's do like a 5-minute Warrior diversion. You okay with that?
Okay.
So seriously, I mean, it's meant facetiously, but really not, because I'm curious about how you're experiencing it. Because you've been, for as long as I've known you, you've suffered through Chris Gatling and Chris Webber and Nelly and Baron Davis leaving and getting fat and all those. Remember Patrick O'Bryant? Remember all those lottery picks that were just horrific?
And you know, one of my closest friends is Chris Mullins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Chris Mullins struggled in the front office. Chris Mullins having a rough, nice guy.
He's turning around, though. I got faith. You know what? What's amazing is 5 years ago, when Joe Lacob buys the team, I think that he's the partner. I don't think he's exactly the full money, but he's like, within 5 years, we're going to win a championship and win multiple championships. And you know how, you know, where you take everything with a grain of salt. It's been so long since we've been relevant. We hadn't won a division in 45 years, let alone ever get better. But I'll give him to his full credit. Immediately got rid of Nelly, which had to be done.
Right.
He's a gimmick coach.
Right.
Never been a fan of his. And to me, he had a plan, brought in this new GM, brought in Jerry West, did things that we haven't seen. And then immediately, they just done genius level at drafting. And I'm sure the rest of my lifetime, I'll never get to see. I don't get to be a New England Patriots fan, so what they've got to experience. I mean, the fact that we're in the same equation now as the Bulls or the Lakers Showtime or what we're doing.
Yeah, what is
and
that
the core
like?
The core group of what we got, and we're exciting to watch. This has been sheer joy. And to me, Steph Curry has a lot of the same things to me as Djokovic does. I said it in Australia. They remind me of each other a lot. They're similar size. People just didn't see the pure greatness of Djokovic like they did for Curry, but both determined and both made big changes to continue to get better. And what Steph did in the offseason after this great season, you know, everybody's, oh, the Warriors are probably going to go down or he can't do better than last year. He's considerably better than he was last year because he's putting in the work. And it's just been fantastic to watch this and fun to watch how they play. And to me, Clay is straight old school. He's straight old school.
Right,
he's like about one of the only guys you'll see in the NBA that he gets butchered. He doesn't complain about calls. He just plays. And I love watching him play together and seeing how he plays off of Steph. It just, I promise you, I'll never get to see anything like this again in my lifetime. I'm going to enjoy it every night. My wife says to me, even the other night, I haven't missed a game all season. I watch every darn game, even Australia, if I can get it on or whatever. It's like, I'm not missing it because I might not ever get to see this again. So I'm going to make a point to see every single game.
What I always like is when they play on the road. I mean, you know, Saturday night's game, that Oklahoma City, I mean, that's sort of an exception. But even, you know, they played the Wizards during Super Bowl week, and I was out in San Francisco, so it was on every TV. We watched that. When this team plays on the road, the fans are going crazy for the Warriors. I mean, this is like America's team, and you forget the home team because these guys are impossible not to like and so fun to watch. That I always like watching the visiting crowds because they end up liking the Warriors by the end of the game.
Well, I'll tell you, at least for me, that hits me immediately. Well, obviously Showtime, the Lakers, was just, they had such a great cast of characters in the 80s. And, you know, to me, their teams with Shaq and Kobe, you know, sometimes when you have superstars, they transcend out of the city. And people just want to see. The Warriors, to me, have become like Fed, like that rock show that people got to see and they're going to root
right,
for. Because to me, the biggest thing about Steph is he's not like LeBron James. He's not dunking on people. He's not the biggest. He's not the strongest. He's not the fastest. People can say that if I go out and shoot 1,000 jumpers a day, maybe I could play high school. Maybe I can play college. His dad said on an interview, like when he was in high, I hope that he can get a college scholarship. They didn't give him one to Virginia Tech, his alma mater.
Yeah, exactly.
And then his college coach told him after the first game that he played, he said that this kid's going to make a lot of money. And Dell's thought was, geez, maybe he'll be playing in Europe. So I just think that there's a lot for tennis players. You can think about that. You know what? Who ever thought 15 years ago David Ferrer would have been what he is?
Right.
He's willed himself to be a great player. And I think that 5 years ago, all these ankle problems that the guy went through and everybody, you know, said that he'd never make it.
You're talking about Curry.
He's willed himself to be in this position, and he deserves it. And I think people can really feed off of him because he's not like LeBron. He doesn't just dunk on people. He's not the biggest, strongest, fastest guy. He's not like Jordan. He's more like a lot of other people that's not, like I said, a physical beast.
Someone was telling me, a guy at the NCAA was saying what they like the best is that it used to be that kids would, you know, they'd lower the hoop to 8 feet and they would try these ridiculous Jordan dunks. So they'd try to dunk, taking off from the free throw line. Now everybody's just working on their jumper. Now everybody just wants to be a pure shooter because they're imitating Curry.
You know, the other night, my idol as a kid was the legendary Bill King. And Bill King would have said, Steph Curry, stop on a dime, 40-footer, nothing but that, you know. And he would have thrown in the holy Toledo. And I'm sure every coach in the NBA would have, like, gone ballistic had their guy taken that shot from that away. And other than Steph. And it's amazing that he can take it and just literally have no fear because I saw a stat. He's shooting, like, from beyond 30 feet. He's shooting 68% from the season. And he's shooting way better than umpteen All-Stars do
Rim. I've seen that. Yeah, exactly. His range is 38 feet.
And it's just like Fed pulling off impossible shots that you think just no one else could do. But and I also think that's the maturation of greatness is when you're willing to do things that others aren't.
I like your hot take with Djokovic. We were playing around with this on Twitter, and the other response I got was the Curry analogy to Federer as two guys who were able to compete. Basically, can we say this on the air, producer? Just compete and not be assholes. That they smile and they do their interviews and they do their autographs and they don't feel like it's a burden. They don't feel like they have to put on the assassin's mask. The Federer Curry sort of bending time and performing with joy and not feeling like they're doing hard labor every time they compete. What do you think of that analogy?
Well, I told you, in my lifetime, I've never seen anybody have a bigger fan base than Roger Federer. I mean, he's just taken it to another level. Darren Revelle, who's a master of crazy stats, he could tell you about funnel cakes and everything. I heard him this morning come up with a stat about Steph. He said it's the highest he's ever heard. he has a 99% approval rating. Not even close. I mean, as great as Jordan was.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Jordan was a tough guy, and Jordan was, come up with these straw men that he didn't like.
Yeah,
and
I think you're only going to get Roger Federer and Steph. They're going to get an insane. He also comes from a great family. He's already married with two kids. His daughter is so lovable. And I think that he really is a great guy. You know, I don't know him. I haven't had beers with him.
But you say approval. Like, what could you possibly disapprove of? What's the absolute, the worst
nothing.
Thing you could take?
His mouthpiece
hangs out.
You know what? You know who took exception to him the other night?
Oscar Robertson.
I'll give you one person. But the interviewer was an idiot. Ask Damon Lillard when he had this unbelievable game. And Portland was the last team to beat the Warriors.
Lillard
scored 51.
Right.
And so he has this great game the other night, and the commentator says to him, he goes, God, what an amazing Steph Curry-type game you had in the first half. And he didn't like that. He's from Oakland, and it's like, opposed to like, God, you had an amazing first half. Yeah, but I just feel like, maybe if you were playing against him, it's like if you're playing against Fed, and you lose, like Djokovic is, and they're always rooting for Fed, So maybe if you're defending him and then he does that little dance after he does it, maybe you're a little bit annoyed the opponent.
I don't know. You hit a 38-foot shot to win an overtime game. It seems to me that's license you get. All right, Jamie's saying we got to get back to tennis.
Okay.
But wait, here's my segue, which is I think there's something. Look, the guy is unbelievably talented. He's fun to watch, and I think like Federer, the fact that there's joy in the performance, and they don't have to sort of play this tough guy role, I think adds to the appeal. But I want to ask you. I never asked you this. If I said to you right now, Brad Gilbert, you're giving me nothing. I thought maybe that would mimic some of your experience during matches coaching Andy Murray. And I've always been really curious. I mean, you talk to Andy Murray, and he's a great guy to talk to. He's thoughtful. I think that the media all like him. Other players like him. And what goes on when he plays his matches is not just crazy to see, but it seems really at odds with who he is. You have any insight into this whole phenomenon of Andy Murray yelling at the box?
Well, it's funny is, obviously I commentate and still get along very well with him. And they sometimes when we say about how he's given the box the business, and I was like, everybody, I mean, when I was coaching him 06, 07, I mean, he's a joy compared to how he was then.
You're giving me nothing.
We didn't have two minivans. It was just me and him on the road. The most amazing thing I've ever seen, John, is Andy off the court. I mean, he's thoughtful. He's not argumentative. He's not like in your face.
That's
not the personality you would think that he has on the court. He thinks a lot. Like when people are talking, he's listening and will remember what everybody says, but he's content to it. But on the court, he gets on the court and a different personality comes out that you don't usually see from an athlete at that level, because normally you see more traits to, when you're being more argumentative off the court, like that. So it's an unusual situation that he sometimes, like, I did even feel like when I coached him, it was like he needs that rage sometimes to make his game get better. And I remember sometimes when he'd be so bad at me, he'd come and like apologize to me afterwards. And then I'd be thinking, he's going to come tomorrow and do it again.
But what's going on there? I mean, is it just during competition, neurochemistry is a powerful force and we do things we don't otherwise do? Is it you guys are joking about this over steak later that night? I mean, how do you explain this?
To me, it's, you can't put something on it to say, okay, you got the answer. When I coach Roddick, Roddick likes to argue.
Right.
It fuels him. It fuels him on the court. If nine guys say red, he's going to say black. And there's plenty of athletes that have different, and then you'll have plenty that are fairly soft-spoken off the court, and that's how they are on the court. So Andy, to me, doesn't play his personality. Obviously, he finds things that happen on the court that trigger something. And obviously, he's had a lot of things in his life, you know, that maybe make trigger things that he keeps to himself. But I can't give you a reason why he does it. But I do think ultimately, which I told him many times, that when you're chasing Fed, Rafa, Joker, those guys, anything that you give away will cost you. He's gotten better at it, but still, I think that is the one thing that maybe holds him back just at the highest level against those guys, is that it's like when you're playing poker, you can't tell the guy next to you that you're holding a 7-2 offsuit or you're holding aces.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a good point. I mean, if I'm looking across the net and I see that, that's...
But John McEnroe, listen, I've seen him many times. I played against him a zillion times.
I heard that.
I remember one time he thumped me in the finals of San Francisco. And I remember a buddy of mine sitting in the stands, and it was like, you know, about telling me bad luck or something like that. You know what he says to me? He goes, he was pissed that John didn't get pissed on the court. It was like, so it's like, how many people when they see, want to see him get mad because maybe they want to get mad at their boss?
That's interesting.
So, I mean, the guy didn't tell me bad luck or this, that. He was mad that John didn't get mad. I was like, I mean, guy already kicked my ass as it was.
What's your relationship with McEnroe these days? John,
no problem.
John, that is. You guys are cool?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we work together a few times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like for me, if you could tell, like, I'm over my tennis. A lot of older people or whatever, they're still fighting to hold on to their tennis, and I'm over it. Like, I'm focused on what's going on now, and you know.
No, I think that's really...
I wish God gave me a better serve, but every year I asked him, he didn't do it. You know?
No, but seriously, I think it's admirable, but I also think it's important. I mean, to a lot of viewers out there, it sounds horrible to say this, but, you know, John McEnroe may as well be Bill Tilden. I mean, my son can't, you know, there's so many people who just don't remember some of these players as athletes. It's like if in an NBA game, if George Gervin and David Thompson were there
I mean, he's at 100 times more level than I was. So I'm not gonna, you know, and you work in TV, everybody's got their own style.
That's true.
You know,
true.
I didn't cultivate my style. I didn't go to some classroom and try to learn how to do it. I just feel like for me, you know, it's best suited for me. And like I said, most importantly, I'm so over that part of my life. Mrs. G, my wife, would be kicking me if I'm just on TV talking about myself. She already gets annoyed enough of me when I talk about players that I coach. She thinks that I should be just focused on eyes in front of me, have fun. But it's like so many kids didn't see a lot of these players. So focus on the ones that you're seeing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, I say that with admiration. Give me you'll be covering Indian Wells?
Will be covering Indian Wells, yes.
So Maria,
Indian Wells, Miami, and then I got the Garden in next week. So
I got
a fun run.
I should say I'm headed off to India. You're coming east. I'm going west. I'm headed to Indian Wells, so we're actually taping this on.
Yeah, so it'll be a good run. We get to last like 5 days of those, and so I thought for sure we'd come into Indian Wells, that Joker would have this streak going to break Roger Federer, but obviously got that eye infection. But every tournament starts and ends with him.
Right.
You know, where he's at, can somebody, you know, do something about it? I'd love to see one of the young Americans make a run. You know, I think it just makes it fun. And more than anything, just great for Larry Ellison, because he's, you know, what he's done to make that tournament into the greatest non-slam, to see both Williams sisters there. I'm sure they took some phone calls and everything. It just, God bless him.
I was going to ask you for five things from Indian Wells. You've given me three already. So no Roger, no Maria. And I feel as though Larry Ellison has done such a nice job with that event, that losing two stars is unfortunate, but it hardly is a deal breaker.
That's like a little bit like a a player talking about himself, you can't control that they're not there,
right.
and don't make that an emphasis. They're not there, so we got to focus on who's there.
You know what? They're still going to give out a trophy.
I think that the best thing for Roger, I said right away when everybody's blowing up on Twitter and asked me, I said, listen, the sensible thing, because he's never been hurt, is start on the clay.
Right.
You know, you don't want to start, rush back to play on cement where you've just had your first surgery of your career. So he's doing the right thing and focus on, I hope that we get some young players. And the last thing, because I got to take the wife to the city, I just hope that we finally get some seeded women players that win some matches.
Well, Serena's going to be there, so that's a plus.
But when she hasn't been there, every single tournament like blows up like on seeded players winning some matches. So hopefully we get some form, we get some good weather, and I pinch myself, honest to goodness, how amazing that tournament has raised the bar.
Great event.
To listen, it's like the only tournament we got in California anymore. So everybody from, you know, where I live, you know, used to go to San Jose or the LA, that's the tournament. And to see how that they keep making it better and friendly, and for that matter, Cincinnati too, these tournaments keep getting better. It's like players pushing the envelope. You know, it's sad what's happening in Miami, so hopefully they'll find some new ground. But it's important as American, we have these tournaments and they're great joys for people to come to and want to be a part of. It makes our sport grow.
Indian Wells is like the Warriors. They played in a hotel parking lot not long ago. They went to Chris Gatling in the low post not long ago, and look at him now. All right,
I can't believe
that
you're throwing Chris Gatling out. And if I'm not mistaken,
the plate
he's like,
hit.
You're going to throw Daniel Marshall in there or something like that.
Yeah, right.
He's obscure that he's tied with Steph Curry at 12 for the most three balls ever.
I'm thinking of all the agony, though. The Todd Fullers, I'm thinking through the years of what you've had to endure to get to where you are. All right, go take Mrs. G.
Now I'm going to drive my wife, and you're going to make me like,
I'm giving you an out.
Have bad memories. Todd Fuller, I remember, I believe it was Dave Twardzik.
Oh, man.
Who played for Portland.
Yeah, the old Portland Trailblazer, yeah. That's right. Yeah,
you're right. I'll never draft Kobe Bryant, some high school kid. And he drafted Todd Fuller over Kobe Bryant. If we didn't deserve paying for that, and listen, in between like 99 and 2003, I think we averaged 65 losses a season. So I know pain, but that one I'll never forget. Todd Fuller over Kobe Bryant.
Enjoy the team you have now. Go take your wife to the city. Always a pleasure.
Take care, buddy.
See you in the desert. All right. See you, Brad. Thanks.
All right. That was Brad Gilbert. We're going to let him go before he faces the wrath of Mrs. G, his wife. You can follow her on Twitter as well as Brad at BG Tennis Nation. You can catch him on ESPN. Again, I think that conversation illustrates why we all like Brad so much. Never boring with him. And he keeps tennis fun. And again, engages that casual fan who may have switched over from the Warriors game. That does it for this week. Feel free to keep the suggestions, the comments, the criticism coming. Always appreciated. We're going to try to do a few more of these when we get to Indian Wells. That's it for this week, though. Enjoy the first few days of the BNP Paribas Open. And talk to you soon. Have a good week, everyone.